Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and with me is the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
We're back again. This is Grade 8.
This is the Grade 8. I'm excited.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
We got a lot to talk about.
You didn't say the Grade 8 with a lot of enthusiasm.
Well, we'll see. Let's judge this at the end, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see how we think we did. We'll self grade.
It could be the 8.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who knows?
Eight. I've got some listener questions, but I thought maybe we would start with some follow up from previous episode and some other interesting topics before we get to the questions. Not that they're not interesting too. We talked about Sleepy Hollow last week, and then you wrote about Sleepy Hollow and basically sort of summarized the problems that you detailed in the podcast and said, if you want to hear me talk about this even more, just listen to this podcast where I talked about it with this guy. So was there any fallout from that? Did you hear from, like, say, the people who do Sleepy Hollow?
I did, actually.
I'm not surprised.
I did hear from the people who make Sleepy Hollow. It was interesting because this person, who I will not name, is powerful enough to make changes. And they wanted to know, like, okay, well, what's your beef? What do you think? We know that you were a fan of the show, and then we read this and we kind of freaked out. So what is it that you think needs to be done? And I was like, well, not much any more than I said already. I mean, I think I've laid it out pretty succinctly here and then also in the podcast. But I just sort of reiterated what we had talked about, Jason, where we were said, Surfer Boy is not going to cut it. He's just not going to cut it. The Holly character is a mess. And I talked about, locking characters in jail or in the insane asylum, et cetera, and then adding more characters. And it pretty much went over what we had said in TVTM7 about the show and that it needs to be fixed, but how hard that is to fix it. And I think that the feedback I got from that was that they are going to talk about that. And I wanted to, like, pick some more and because, we really appreciate this feedback. It means a lot. I was like, look, it's hard to run a show. You got to do what you got to do. But just, these are my takes as the TV critic. And, I have a whole lot more to say about the show if you want to hear it. But in just a nut, this is your current pressing problem. And it really sounded like that was going to go back into the writer's room and talk about it. But part of me was like, oh, I really want to hear what you say in there, because you can't really fix that really quickly. I mean, you and I talked about that. You can't turn the ship around that quickly.
Yeah, they started shooting season 2, like, I think in the spring. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to see how fast they can turn it around. It's interesting that they wanted to hear what you had to say. I mean, I think you were pretty clear about it, that this is – I heard somebody on Twitter made a suggestion about why they did this, and it's that they introduced Surfer Boy so that if they kill off Ichabod Crane's wife later on, there's somebody to stand between the Abby and Crane, like, to keep them apart. I that's a little too conspiracy theory for me, but I don't know. I never really get into the whole shipping thing where people are like, oh, I want all these different relationships of these different characters. I feel like our complaints about Surfer Boy aren't that he is getting in the way of any spark between those characters. I think our problem is that the show's good when they work together, and now they've got this third wheel just, like, bumbling around. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not as fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be better if Ichabod and Abby don't get together.
I agree.
It's the whole thing from, like, Elementary, and Elementary on CBS now has the problem where you have Sherlock pulled apart now from Watson and living in different areas, and they've got to try to get it back together, put them back together. But I think it was an interesting reset. But that was that's 3 seasons into it. This one's just the second one, and they need to develop more story. And that was my bottom line to the people from who were working on the show, was that you've got to make a show, focus your show on the people, the thing that people like, and that's Abby and Ichabod. And that's, it's funny how simple that is and people forget about it. They just get, I think there's notes, or they just get it in their head that they need more characters, and you're like, you know what? You could just do that episode of those two together, and everybody would watch, and it'd be one of your highest rated ones.
Yeah, no, and also it's the we want to give them some, you know, an arc where there's this guy, and it's like putting things between them and all that. And it's like, yeah, but that's great to give your characters tension, but if you're destroying the best thing about your show by doing it, it's probably a mistake.
Exactly. we'll file that under shows lessons that shows need to learn. And, you know, if you don't learn them, you get canceled.
Well, I actually am kind of despairing a little bit, because they didn't just call you and say, oh, yeah, we already knew that, and we already fixed it, and just watch, because in three or four episodes, Surfer Boy is going to get, you know, his head cut off, and like Catalyst Horseman. And instead, they're like, oh, tell us what you think. And my response to that is, oh, geez. they didn't know that this was a problem. They're only now hearing that people don't... Oh my! Oh yeah. Well, Sleepy Hollow. Good luck.
That's the problematic part of it. If you have to be told that's an issue, then you've got a problem that's deeper than anybody can fix, and maybe the people in charge of fixing it or can't do it.
Well, there's two weeks in a row where we've had fallout from things we say on this podcast from people in the industry, which is frightening, because we had the Jane the Virgin.
Yes.
Showrunner follow us on Twitter, and now somebody
and
from Sleepy Hollow is calling you. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What will be next?
Perhaps it's getting out there.
Perhaps, Tim, it will. You mentioned canceled shows. Perhaps it'll be somebody who's angry because their show was canceled, or grateful that their show was canceled. We've had our first round of cancellations, have we not?
We have, and that's, and you know, we've been remiss in not in getting, you know, Manhattan Love Story was the first one. You know, and thank God, right? That show shouldn't have been made. No one wants to see your thought bubbles on what you're thinking, because you're both vapid idiots. Okay, that's just done. Let's get rid of that.
I had some friends who were sad that A to Z got the axe. I had friends who actually liked that show.
I thought that was the cheekiest little rom-com that was not that funny. You know, and it was like, I just, I don't know. I think that Ginsberg belongs back on Saturday, on Mad Men, where he's lost his nipple. And then in a chaotic mind meld and meltdown. That's where he belongs. I'm not sure he belongs on a romantic comedy, but
need to find something else for Kristen Milioti to do, because I think she's pretty good. But
I think so too. I just, there was something, there was overkill with, especially on ABC. There was overkill with the whole schmaltzy two people. Look at, that's Manhattan Love Story, right? So they're gone. A to Z is the same kind of thing. They gave more, shockingly, NBC gave more episodes to Married and Marry Me. And that's another kind of love story that's not going anywhere. So I think, look, a lot of these shows would have been canceled earlier. I think there was more hesitation this year because of there was not that much on the bench. And there's not that much stuff that they love on the bench. So anyway, those were canceled. You may remember that Utopia was canceled.
Yeah, that's a sad one, because we had our theory that they should turn it into a reality show about people on a reality show getting canceled, and they didn't do that.
Missed opportunities.
In fact, there was like a tweet from the guy who ran the cameras or something saying, "Nope, we're just shutting it down. We're not gonna. They're being ushered out, and we're not filming it." And it's like, guys, totally missed opportunity.
Show
getting canceled on TV. That would be so great.
You eat the whole animal.
Yeah, that's right. You got to use every part of the buffalo.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. Like, who's not forward thinking enough to say, well, that's a good idea. Let's film our failure, and then, like, we'll probably get our best ratings ever. If I was Fox, I would have been all over that.
Hey, if the producers of Sleepy Hollow want more, want to add even more cast members to their show, I hear John Cho is available to come back.
Oh, so sad. Today's news that Selfie was canceled. I guess, but you know, it's also, look, this is a show we should put under our microscope today, because it, you know, RIP, it went out of business today. Though they will, just like Bad Judge and A to Z, which were also canceled, they're going to get their, what's happening is that the 13 that have been bought and shot are going to air. So viewers, it's not being pulled off the air right now, like Utopia was. And I think that's because networks don't burn off in the summer as much anymore.
Right.
And I feel like they think that, like, you know what? You can't throw something new in on short notice without much advertising and have it do any better than this one you're just canceling. So let's ride out the flames. Let's ride out the garbage fire. you know, just put some wheels on it and roll it down the street. It's a gigantic garbage fire, and we're just going to just be in that thing for a while, and then until it hits the curb and tips over, episode 13. So I think that's what they're doing. And they're going to do that with Selfie, too. They'll run it out. But boy, here's a show with John Cho and Karen Gillan. You'd think really great actors, really likable people, and yet no one's watching.
No. I think everybody I talked to, the pilot was so off-putting that it was almost like a – like it didn't matter if they turned it around in episode two. People really didn't like the pilot.
Yeah. And that, you know, just – I mean, just to go back – we've probably touched on this, but God, here it is 2014. So many lessons to be learned in television, and at every Television Critics Association summer, TCA, God damn it. Every TCA press tour, we hear the same thing. And it's like, we're, you know, it was a good pilot, not great pilot, but we're going to tinker as we go forward. You don't get that shot, people. You don't get two shots.
Yeah.
I mean, like you just said, people were so turned off by the pilot, they don't want to come back. And I think that's – and why would you when you've got so many other choices to
– Yeah, maybe you just start with episode two. And unless your premise is so twisty and complicated, just start with episode two and hold the pilot and run it later. Right?
Constantine where they should have just run episode two because episode one, the pilot, was – focus 45 minutes on a girl that was never in there again.
Yeah, I heard. So we did on The Incomparable last week. We did an episode about fall TV and went over all the shows that people were watching. And I heard from a couple people who saw the first episode of Constantine. And they said, yeah, the ending is so bizarre because it's literally like Poochie in The Simpsons. It's like, and then she went back to her home planet at the end, and there'll be a new girl next week. And that also the tone that the first episode is all kind of convoluted and twisty and mythology. And then the second episode is like a procedural and much clearer and linear and easy to follow. And it's like, well, what show are you making?
Yeah, they're not making that pilot anymore.
No.
That was an instance of not wanting to burn all your money. They should have just scrapped the pilot. And, I love covering the business because you can't, just when you think someone will learn a lesson or somebody has rules of operation that they're going to follow. Well, that's not true the next season or even the halfway through the current season. So it used to be that networks would just reshoot the pilot or they would just dump it. But, you know, here's NBC saying, yeah, our whole pilot is a show that really is not our show. Plus, the entire subject matter of the 45 minutes of the pilot is about converting this girl to demon hunting. And then at the end saying, nah, not so much. You're not coming back. I mean, that's that is bad service. That's like you going into the deli, Jason, saying, I want this and this and this and this on rye bread. And then they give you, you know, they give you a burrito.
No, it's worse. They charge me and and then I wait in line as they make the sandwich and they make all the ingredients and they get to the end and they say, oh, but we don't have that pastrami that you wanted. So we put some tuna on it here. And at that point, you're like, well, I can't really – can I ask for my money back or do I just take the – it's just a little – it's kind of too late. Like you just got to commit to what your show is. It does feel like they're hoping they can get people to episode two, that like crossing their fingers. Like, come on. You just ride through this one and we'll get – nobody will remember the bad pilot. And sometimes I think that's true. But sometimes I think the pilots are so bad or so misrepresentative of what the show is going to be that – you know, it's a missed opportunity, right? Like if the executives really, they must have thought that the Selfie pilot was okay. But everything I heard was that it was really, they were unlikable.
It was, yeah, they totally so, Mulaney that.
Yeah, good one.
By the way, Mulaney, let's not kid ourselves. Even though it's not officially canceled, it's canceled. It's not coming back. So you can Manhattan Love Story, Utopia, Bad Judge, A to Z, Selfie, and Mulaney are your current fired jobless shows.
It sounds like Scorpion is going to get renewed for the whole season, though.
I believe Scorpion did get renewed for the entire season. I think it happened today, actually.
Amazing.
Either that or Forever got a full season pickup.
Wow.
Which is it's another one where you're like, really?
CBS must just decide, look, we're going to ride that for the year. And then I think CBS is riding so high sometimes that they just like, we'll give it a year. And then at the end of the year, they'll make a judgment about whether it's season two. It's a little like HBO, just sort of, unless you totally tank on night one, you get a second year.
Yeah, but I think part of that is because when CBS has a failed show, it's still getting about 7 million viewers.
Yeah, right. they can make it work. And sometimes the shows build, and then you know, then they bring them back for the second.
Well, and also there's the one thing that you can do in you know, they always say of like if you're a coach, what can you teach your team when you're in the middle of a blowout? Well, yeah, you can't win every one. That losses are, you can learn from losing.
Moral victory.
And this one, moral victory. And this one, I think the networks can learn from, okay, you made a bad show. You spent a lot of money on it. You marketed it. You sold it to us. And it's not working. But those 6 million people who are watching it, or 4 million or whatever, those loyal people, don't burn them. You know,
right.
run it through 10 or 13, whatever you paid for, 9. Run it through that bunch. Give them a little bit of closure and say, hey, that's all we got. That's all we shot. That's all we got. And
yeah, my understanding with A to Z is that they haven't even shot all 13 yet. So they're basically being told they can write a series conclusion if they want. So if those people who really love A to Z, they could keep watching and they'll get a little 13-episode miniseries thingy that has an ending.
It's the
presumably.
Future of TV.
Yeah.
Limited series.
Yeah.
Event television.
Yeah, go in expecting you're only going to do one season. And then if they ask you back, figure out something to do for season 2.
Well, that's honestly, I love it. This is a little bit of a, you know, switching gears here, but based on that, I will say that one thing we didn't talk about was a show called The Game, a spy show. Mm. But I really loved The Game. But talking to the guy live at TCA who made the show, having him say, you know, everybody's like, hey, look, this is really good. Is there a second season? Because it doesn't seem like there really can be. And he was like, yeah, you know, we didn't know if it was going to be one, so I didn't write it that way. But yeah, we can like make this up as a renewable series with a different cast, which is basically like an anthology with like True Detective and Fargo. But I like that that's how the Brits work. That's how they've always worked. They're like, you know what? We did 7 or 8 really taut, super intense episodes, and it's fun and it has an ending. And we left some vagaries in there because life is vague. And woo, if the BBC says we can make another one, we will. That's great. I love that model.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Just tell the story you want to tell.
Absolutely. And if people are not watching that, I think tonight might be the second episode of... Let's see.
Can you get those on you probably do like... on demand or on their website something.
Yeah, you can get the game, you know, whenever we get this up, which is when, you know, we're busy people.
It'll be the November 7th at some point when we get this up. People may listen to it later.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Toby Whitehouse did The Game. Oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not personally, but he did. He's one of those Doctor Who guys.
He is, and strong stuff. And The Game is a British spy series. I love the whole spy versus spy, and this is...
He did Being Human, the one with the werewolf and the ghost and the...
Yeah, which was very creative for its time, I thought.
Yeah. The British one, not the U.S. one.
The British one, not the U.S. Being Human. God, it's really confusing. But the funny thing that he said, too, about The Game, because, you know, a lot of critics who had watched the advanced tapes or episodes, a couple of them, were really on board. And the second episode of The Game, I believe, is November 7th tonight. Mm. And then as we record... And people can catch up on it. And it goes, I believe, 8 episodes.
Cool.
And it's, you know, it'll have a beginning, it'll have an end, and then it'll probably come back later. And it's that 1972 British spy series where the Soviet Union, Britain realizes that the Soviet Union is putting into play some sleeper cells that it had put into the streets of London ages and ages ago, waking them up. And for something big, and MI5 is basically... caught flat-footed, and they need to find out what the hell the Soviets are up to. And it's really pretty riveting. It's dense. I like it a lot. And it's got Brian Cox in it. Of course, if you've watched the any of the Bourne movies, you have to have Brian Cox in an espionage series. So that's really strong. But the funny part was we were talking to Toby about why they called it The Game. Because all the critics were like, you know, kind of a good series. Why'd you call it The Game? And he said, well, that's what it's called, The Game, or often The Great Game. And we're like, okay, we get that, the Spicers. He goes, we want to call it the Great Game, but then Sherlock did a great episode called The Great Game. And so we decided, and we were kind of grumbling in the crowd, like, yeah, it's still not very good. And he goes, we were going to call it, like, Box 8, 805, which is where the MI5 drops its secret missions. And he goes, but that was so bland. Everyone's like, oh, no, that would have been so much better. He's like, did you watch Box 805 or whatever? You know, but it's amazing. It's like, you don't know what Box 805 is. The game is the epitome of vague. You know, so it's like, oh, the Brits. Never mind that. It's a good show. Go watch it.
So it's a spy show. Like, it sounds a little bit like a 70s version of The Americans. Would that be unfair, or is that a nice simplification of the period spy show?
Absolutely. The Americans, of course, to me right now, ongoing, and that is the flat out best series on spy series on television. Oh. And of course, when you're talking The Americans, you're looking at, you know, they're in the top five right now of shows that are on television, drama wise.
Top five. Speaking of which, I'm looking at an article that you seem to have written on The Hollywood Reporter. Tim Goodman picks the five best spy shows of all time. Now, we talked about you were writing something about spy shows last mm-hmm. week.
Right.
I do think it is bold that Thunderbirds made it on your list. I think that's kind of great.
It is bold. Let's just tell the people what's on there, Jason. What's number one? Even though, damn it, there's no numbering. It's not numbered.
This is not like spy power ratings. Power
no,
rankings.
And they also, they're supposed to be numbered. It's supposed to be numbered in the magazine too. And so the Americans is number one.
Americans is number one.
Mm-hmm. Smiley's People from the BBC in 1982.
Alec Guinness.
Yes, so good, so great. Archer. Archer's a spy series.
It
Come
is.
On.
It is.
People thought I was goofing when I put that on there. I love Archer. To me, Archer is brilliant television. So why would we not? Just because it's animated, can it not be a spy series? And then I put the Thunderbirds on there as number four. And as somebody pointed out to one of our regular old school TVTM listeners, whose kids go to school at my kid's school, pointed out to me the other day that he was so excited to see Thunderbirds on the list. And then he said, but the funniest thing about it, and this is what I didn't even know, because this is leading into a story where we have lots of things that I don't know happened to the story. But he said, it's kind of funny. I thought it was hilarious that the Thunderbirds made your list, and that some people commented on the Facebook page that they were going to go track it down. He goes, but I was just laughing out loud that you didn't mention that they were marionettes.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Of course I mentioned that they were marionettes and super marionation. But no, in the editing process, that little bit got left out.
Yeah, it just says that it's wildly influential and has gripping story arcs. It does not mention the fact that the characters are puppets
with strings. Yeah. That's genius. I love the editing. Oh, and Mission Impossible was my last one, which it fits. And but the genesis of this story, which is why it's funny to me, I always laugh at this is Schadenfreude for me, I think, and that is that I wrote the review of the game, and my editor said, hey, can you do five of your favorite TV spy shows? Mm-hmm. I'm like, sure.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. I said, it's going to crunch the list. I said, really, five? I mean, it's not very many. He said, no, it's got to be five. We're going to tie it on space, keep it down to like 50 words each. And so I did it, and I did one with some tie. I had a tie. I think I had Mission Impossible and something else in there, and Get Smart maybe, and they I said, no. So they took that out, and I was like, okay, no big deal. These are just five picks. You know, I'm picking five randomly. But I'm putting them in order, which you don't see on the thing. Yeah. So I believe in the magazine, it just says, here's five other picks that Tim likes. Except when it got onto online, which is where really, let's face it, where most people see things.
Sure. They fluffed it up, and they had to make an article out of it, right?
They said, yes. And so this listicle became, and I quote, Tim Goodman picks the five best shows, spy shows of all time.
Well, so a little editorial inside baseball here. When you see a story that's bylined, and yet the first paragraph of the story refers to the writer whose byline you're reading as another person, that's a sign that they didn't write this, and that there's been some shenanigans, because the lead of this story is the Hollywood Reporter's chief TV critic Tim Goodman took the opportunity to pick his five. It's telling the story is that you picked a list of shows. It's like, alert. Word has reached these shores. Tim has picked five favorites. Strange. Right. So did people get angry. They're like, what do you mean? What about this?
Well, the genius of it is, you know, I have a Google alert on my name.
It helps me.
Gotta have it. And it helps find out like where your story is being picked up and who's running them. As opposed to lots of other things. One of my favorite things in life is to find out what other Tim Goodmans are out there and what they're doing. You know, one's a football player, one's a math guy, one's a musician, et cetera, et cetera. But the bulk of them that are coming in for me, of course, are these. And I'm like, oh, hey, Philippine Times ran that story. Or, hey, The Guardian did this. Or BBC America or BBC Radio quoted one of my stories, et cetera. And you learn a lot about where your work ends up when you have Google Alert. Well, it turns out that whatever day that this got blasted out, you know, if you're an editor in some far-flung news organization around the world and you see the guy from The Hollywood Reporter picked the 5 best spy shows of all time, yeah, let's pick that up. So basically, this little teeny tiny story that I did in, you know, X amount of minutes, very short amount of time, as just things I like, not like the best ever. And then what has been edited to take out, you know, important things like saying, hey, you know, the Thunderbirds is a it's about marionation. They're puppets on strings. All that stuff being cut out. This story went global. I mean, it was picked up around the world. And it was like, in recent times, probably one of the more popular things that I've done in the last maybe 6 months. I mean, my stuff gets picked up and run lots of different places. But this one was insane because I kept getting these alerts and I'm like, oh, great. Now it's here. Now it's in, it's in India. And then it's like, oh, look, Thailand just picked that up. You know, it's like everywhere. So everywhere, Germany picked it up. And everywhere it went, somebody had a comment.
do you wish now that you'd put a little more time into the web version rather than letting them just go, sort of slap your little sidebar up? And
I wish the web people would like not, you know, cut it up a little bit is what I wish. And I wish they wouldn't have put that headline on there, because now it looks like, you know, I just half-assed this column and somebody in like Bombay is like, it's ridiculous. Where is MI5? Where's Spooks? You know, with same show. But they're like, where's all this?
You have to admit, this is not actually that different than the power rankings.
It's not.
Which also sounds very serious and is made up by you.
It is. But this one somehow.
That's intentionally made up by you. This, not so much.
It's accidentally made up. And then it was put into you know, a powdered wig and
this is great. This is great because you could write a blog post sometime that's like the 10 other, you know, the 10 best spy shows that I didn't recommend or something, and you get another story out of it.
Right. I can say, by the way, here's the other ones that should have included Mirror. But, you know, look, I had to keep a lot of things out. Like Alias is a series that I really liked, and I wanted to include that, but there were reasons why it didn't make the first list of 5. And I explained those reasons, and then they got edited out. And then people were like, there's no Alias. Where's Get Smart? You know, all this kind of stuff. And then there's lots of really good stuff, like Wild Wild West. There's things that didn't make it that people were like, what an idiot. Now worldwide, I'm considered an idiot. So
congratulations. Yeah. You've gone worldwide.
It's good work. It's good work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you can get it.
Worldwide idiot.
Nice. Nice. Oh, Agent Carter coming up, too. Another spy show.
Another spy show. More.
Spies. Are we going into maybe spies or the new zombies?
I would, you know what? I still love zombies, but I would do some spies. Do you, did you have any favorites? I also didn't include 24 on my list. Not a shocker.
Sure. Well, I mean, Alias is a good one, but and for me, it's like the first 2 years of that show are fantastic, and then it just sort of fell apart.
J.J. Abrams doesn't even know what the story doesn't mean anymore. He made a joke one time on press tour that he was watching, and he's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
It's your show.
Yeah. And then the one I mentioned last week, which is the British sitcom called Spy, which is mostly a family sitcom, but it's about a guy who accidentally becomes a spy and in a very incompetent British spy agency. It's pretty good. It's on Hulu.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's pretty
good. I believe it was one of the ones that popped up on the...
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's called Spy, so it's like pretty obvious.
Well, I didn't have The Saint on there.
Oh.
That was a good show.
Spies is kind of, there are lots of things you could argue are spies or not spies that are, you know, like 24 is a good example. I mean, they're kind of like FBI guys. They're not really, you know, they're not really spies, but they kind of are. I don't know.
Right.
Spies are a little, little hazy sometimes. Like, you know, I was going to say The Equalizer. I really liked The Equalizer when I was a kid.
Yes.
And
that,
and Edward Woodward was a retired spy, and Robert Lansing was his old boss at like the CIA. And although that show was sort of a, you know, just an action vigilante kind of show, the fact was, as that show went along, a lot of the storyline ended up being things from his past as a spy coming back to haunt him. And that was really cool. But it wasn't really a spy show. It was like a, right, about a guy who used to be a spy. So it's not quite, right, the same.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
But I like that show.
And I had, I think I might have originally said I was going with, I think I, instead I went with Smiley's People over Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, yeah.
Spy, but that's another one, right there. And there was an explanation of why that was chosen, and then it's gone.
It's not in there. Yeah. All right, so I look forward to the Spy power rankings at some point in the future.
I'm going to have to do that, like, Dear World.
The top
I'm
Spy
sorry.
11, the Spy 11 Spy shows.
Yes, the Elite 11 Spy shows.
Mm-hmm. That's good. You want to do some listener questions?
Yes. What do the listeners say?
I've got
cute, but they're an adorable bunch. Have
they
you
are.
Seen them?
They are. They are handsome. They are handsome, man. Listener Brando has this question.
Yep.
How about an all-time power rankings at some point? What shows were the dynasties of their decades? Which ones were like the Bills? Was Buffy the Dallas Cowboys of the 90s in terms of winning? Would peak Buffy beat peak Breaking Bad? How weird can we make this analogy?
Yeah, that's
thank you, Brando.
That is already weird because he's got football mixed in with a lot of other things there. That's good.
Yeah.
I actually think he's kind of riffing on the fact that I liked so much football and we talked about sports on
TV. That's probably true. But so you thought I was bad when you picked all-time spy shows. Imagine if you did an all-time power rankings. People would just explode. They would just read them and their heads would blow off.
I will tell you, this is an actual true story of somebody who's not at the THR anymore. But they said, when I first introduced the idea, he hadn't even heard of the power rankings yet. And I told him what I did, and then he was excited about it. He goes, okay, as soon as this runs, I want you to start doing a power rankings of rank all the channels in order. And I was like, really? That's really long. He goes, yeah. But I said, you mean like a top 10 or 11 like I normally do? He goes, no, he goes, rank them all. And I'm like, and cable channels too? So, you know, that would have been taking me. I would have had this gigantic beard. I would have been a crazy man. I could never have finished that.
And you said channels instead of networks. So I'm imagining like seven. Seven is number one is seven. Number, right. Number two, five. Number three, 12.
That could have
strange.
Been my way of, yeah.
Number
getting
four.
Back to them. Just two numbers.
1,002.
Big fan of 267.
Yeah, sure.
Ugh, that show really underrated on the DirecTV channel.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the... I used to have all the Comcast or the Comcast Sportsnet channel numbers on DirecTV memorized, and then I switched to Comcast, and I have no idea where those channels are now. It was
You switched to Comcast?
I did.
Really?
I did. I switched to Comcast from
DirecTV.
That's
not U-verse, though, is it? No, that's AT&T's.
No, it's just, yeah, it's just cable.
Okay. That's doable.
I'm a Pac-12 football guy, and the DirecTV and Pac-12 network cannot make a deal. So,
ooh.
Okay. So I got to watch Cal lose on TV, Tim. I got to pay for that.
Yeah, there is a lot of that.
Uh-huh. And the new TiVo came out, and I really like the new TiVo. So that only works with cable, so that was another reason to switch.
Wow.
The new, yeah, I know.
It's crazy. You are a tech guy. There is that element. Breaking news. You're involved in
tech talk. Anyway, yeah. So you for Brando's sake, consider an all time. Power.
Okay.
You know, in my personal, I haven't compiled an exact top 10, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer is probably my number one of all time, for just personally. That may be my favorite show of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Wow. That is...
That was... Okay. Have I shocked you? Have I surprised you?
Yeah, I would... I like Buffy a lot. I think
it's my number one.
If I pressed, it would be in my top 10.
Ah, Tim. Well, that's okay. That's why you're the TV critic, and I'm just this guy over here. That's okay.
He's not the Messiah.
No.
He's a very Nazi boy.
Here is listener Matt Fetters, who tweeted us, each season of The Newsroom, which is premiering this weekend,
Sunday.
Is that right?
Yep.
The final season has fewer episodes than the previous season, 10, 9, 6, any inside scoop as to why. And although I referred to him as Matt W. Fetters, which is his Twitter name, he wanted me to tell you he's Matt from Bethesda.
we have so much history on our own. So, you know, our...
Again, don't look at the archives of the TV Talk Machine. Yeah, that's what we're telling you.
The genealogy of the TV Talk Machine goes way back, and it incorporates Matt from Bethesda.
Yes, he's a longtime listener, first-time tweeter. Uh-huh. So what's the – I mean, this is Aaron Sorkin. I feel like this is like – Aaron Sorkin's too tired to write too many episodes of his show, but I don't know.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think that it came out as 10 as kind of an experiment for HBO. I'm sure they would have preferred 13 or 12. But I think when it came out and it didn't do critically well, actually he did ratings wise pretty well. That show was doomed from the beginning. I mean, people just did not like it in the critical world. And you know, I hate to say it, but that really matters to HBO. It probably matters more than, I mean, it doesn't matter more than it getting a billion viewers, but they prefer something like, you know, Game of Thrones to get like millions of viewers and have, you know,
and
all the critics
acclaim,
on the side.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. And with The Newsroom, it was just a lightning rod of stories. And I would say that I don't know this for sure. I've had this discussion though, but don't know if this is actually what they believe. And it's that I think that kind of the hate watching binge that was popular a long time ago was really in vogue with Newsroom, especially among critics. And so even though it was some of the people were watching it, there was some thought that like, okay, it's in its name is in the zeitgeist basically because people don't like watching it. And that's not a good – that's not where they want to put their business. So I think they just – you know, and Aaron was doing movies and stuff. So there was probably just a sense of like, you know, a gigantic Charlie Brown sigh. And they just said, okay.
So they didn't want to can Aaron Sorkin, but nor did they want to like double down on – The Newsroom, right?
I'm surprised it's lasted this long. And you know, I'll watch this. I mean, it's just, to me it's almost unwatchable. It's just so preachy and unwatchable.
I couldn't get through like three episodes of the first season.
Yeah, it's Sorkin done like Sorkin should not do himself. I mean, he has his tendency, you know.
Yeah.
And you know what the bad part was, he was coming off a lot of success with his movies.
Social Network.
Social Network. And he engaged a lot with people about why they didn't like the show. There was very big, he was involved in defending the show and it just went sideways. It just did not do him any good.
All right. We have another tweet question from David in the 812. another old TVTM.
You know, and that's something that I think that would be okay to bring back. I think people would like to put their area codes.
Sure.
We have a fondness at the TV Talk Machine to know where your area code is.
Right. I'm in the 415. You're in the 5 and dime. The 5
and dime. 5 and dime. Formerly of the 415.
Yeah. 415.
Which is really in Northern California, 415 is the gold standard.
Yeah, that's the canonical area code.
It's completely
in the
canonical.
That is the area code.
No
of record.
Doubt about it.
Area
so if you're from, no matter where you're from, that we'll take those. I love area codes.
So David in the 812, he is in Southern Indiana. He asks, is there anything you might have scheduled differently this fall? Can you name like one of the worst or the worst scheduling decisions so far? Anything in the schedule that jumps out at you you think is bad?
Yeah, I think that, some of the ones that have been canceled.
So, like,
are
putting
not.
Selfie on the schedule.
Putting Selfie on the schedule is probably not a good idea. You know, it's funny that I love this talk because there's always that. But usually it involves around like ABC putting the wrong show behind Modern Family. Initially, they put Blackish behind
it. They
did
it. They nailed it.
And that was great. Let's see. That is really good. You know, yeah. Let me go through this just quickly, and I'll tell you where I thought. I think Monday nights are pretty good. I don't think you see any cancellations looming there. By the way, maybe that's because maybe that has something to do with how it was scheduled. But when you get into Tuesday night, you've got Selfie, So this is Selfie, which is a show nobody knows. No one's ever seen it. It's kicking off a night. That is very ballsy. You know, an unknown show starting off a night, and that's tough. Going into, at the time, I don't know what was there, but because I guess that was Manhattan Love Story. Yeah, so that you had two shows that no one knew starting off the first block, and that's it's never going to work. So that didn't work for me. I don't think that there's any good coming out of. I mean, people will say they like New Girl and Mindy Project together. I totally agree with that. On Tuesdays, I like Flash and Supernatural together just because I think they work. But I don't think Marry Me and About a Boy on NBC, which, you know, if those shows are around in a month, I'll be stunned. I don't think those shows did well in their slots. And then let's see here. The other one, yeah, I think Fox, when it has baseball, it has a hard time getting launched. But how does Hell's Kitchen go into Red Band Society? I don't get that. Right? I mean, I don't know. So yeah, there's some of those. Let me check Thursday, because Thursday's the one that I think has some. Yeah, they've got some ones that don't work. So you have The Biggest Loser with on NBC, which is a reality show, going into Bad Judge and A to Z. You know, Bad Judge is this totally awful, like snarky. She breaks the rules at night, and then you have this sweet A to Z love story. Those two didn't go together at all. And then you have this, you know, dark parented following A to Z. It's like, okay, kids, when you fall in love, it's like this. And then when you get married and have kids, it's like this on Parenthood. So I don't know. But yeah, I think there are through the schedule, there are dubious pairings, we should say.
All right.
And I think that, like, it doesn't really help them when you put stuff like, I think Grimm and Constantine together on Friday nights works. We talked about that because it's a sci-fi night, but I think it's a staple of television that you wonder why they do it, and are they it's almost like making a move. This is not to get too inside baseball, but I think when a programmer sits down, what approach do they take? Do they say, let me program from my network? This I create flow here. If they did that, they might have better schedules. But then they say, oh, well, this works great for us, but ooh, look, we're going up against this on that night. And then it gets in their heads, and then they don't know what they're doing. Hmm. So that's kind of that's my summation.
So related comment, and this is from our sort of regular questioner now, My Vogue on Poetry.
Yes.
He's back again with more poetry.
And it is it is quite the handle there, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. The Little Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference in there. It's not bad. He says, I just discovered Legend of Korra, but I think it was the wrong fit for Nickelodeon. What show would you switch to a new network? He says, for example, I would probably watch Person of Interest if it was on FX, but I just can't get past the CBS-ness of it all.
Oh, yeah. No, that's interesting. I actually, well, I mean, Legend of Korra, which is a great show, it's on that channel because that's, you know, the origin story that started it all was on Nickelodeon. So you kind of have to, kind of have to go there with the last
like
Airbender.
Yeah, right.
So that was that one.
So is there a show on now that that feels like it's sticking out like a sore thumb, like it's on the wrong network? I mean, ABC's got some CBS shows on it.
And Fox Fox does have some CBS shows on it too.
Castle.
Yeah. Yeah, Castle seems like very much a CBS show. That's a good one, because I'm just in them. CBS is pretty good at putting their stuff together. Yeah, what doesn't fit? Well, I mean, you could make a snarky comment and say, okay, what is Jane the Virgin doing on the CW?
Yeah.
Ah, ha, ha. We just we inverted our love for it there and saying it's so good it should be on another channel. But no, I'm happy that that's where it's supposed to be. And you should watch that no matter whether you like the CW or not. Yeah, I can't off the top of my head. I can't really give it accurate, you know, because like Sleepy Hollow – That's perfect on Fox. Mm-hmm. I think Gotham's good on Fox. I guess maybe you could make the statement that the male skewing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would not be so good on ABC. But you've got perfect synergy. Synergy has to be at play there.
That's the only place they can put it.
Yeah. So there's that one. I don't know. But I'm going to think about that. Maybe we'll come back in a future episode, because that was well thought out, that one.
All right. Thank you, My Vogue on Poetry.
Which never gets tired of saying that.
And we have a comment from Schinkel, and I just thought this was really good. We mentioned Battlestar Galactica and last week, and why people didn't like the ending, and makes an excellent point. The issue with Battlestar Galactica is that the title sequence kept saying that the Cylons had a plan, which they didn't. And I totally agree with that. Every episode it said, and they have a plan. And as somebody who watched every single episode, I look back and think, what was that plan exactly? I mean, it just doesn't compute. If they had a plan, it was a pretty minor, not that, I guess their plan was just to hang around the humans. And what was the big conspiracy that we were sold and we didn't get?
Well,
anything.
I mean, yeah, I get that, but you know, maybe it was just a bad plan.
Yeah, they had a plan. It didn't work. They didn't execute it properly.
Yeah, every week the 49ers have a plan. And it's not working for them.
It's not. No, it's. Let's not even talk about that. How about that parade though? How about that World Series parade? There we go. That's better.
And the Warriors are undefeated as we speak.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So a little sports news there.
Gotta have a little.
Listener Max says, hey, Tim, my recollection is, this is from our Facebook page, you didn't like the comeback the first time around and it quietly disappeared. It's since become this cult sleeper phenomenon. I hear a lot of people saying it was ahead of its time. Have you revisited it since its first run? And what do you think of the return? Listener Max is also formerly Wicked Machine back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Long time follower. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was not a big fan of it then. I'm not a big fan of it now. Unfortunately, I do, you know, and there's a great divide in the critic ranks, of course, and as there should be. But I hate sometimes when everybody kind of likes one thing and I'm following them all and they can't shut up about it. And like so many people are so excited about the comeback. But I find the comeback, you know, it falls into the cringe comedy category. It was a little bit ahead of its time as far as it skewing. I don't think it was ahead of its time on cringe comedy. I don't agree with that at all. But it was definitely ahead of its time as it poked fun at reality television that involved stars. So it was definitely ahead on that. My problem with it is I feel like people are laughing at it because they have read that it's a cult show and it's funny. And I watch it. I'm like, you know, if you didn't read all those tweets, would you really be laughing at this? Because it's not... It's not that funny. I think it's definitely painful to watch. And there is this sort of bare naked documentary element of it where if being cringe worthy like Larry David's show is what you're after, they can totally nail that. But I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, which is the funny part.
So have you seen the new episodes? And
yes.
So it just reaffirms your opinion of the.
Yeah, and my review will go up both for the newsroom and for the comeback will be online on THR.com. It will be online on Sunday, day of.
On the 9th.
Those premieres. So.
All right. The comeback.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Don't call it a comeback. Oh, moving into, yeah.
So
LL Cool J rap.
Listener Michael on the Facebook page wants to know, why do some actors like Kiefer Sutherland on 24 and Jon Hamm on Mad Men get producer or executive producer credits on their own show? Is it just a vanity title or is it for something more?
Oh, definitely not a vanity title. No, it's a money thing. You know, what you really want, I mean, once you become the star and you're clearly the reason that people are watching it, which is true of Kiefer and arguably true of
Jon Hamm.
Yeah, because Don Draper is really the central role there. Mm-hmm. You want to get producer credit. You get a little bit more money. You have a little bit more say-so on things. But what you really want to do is you want to get executive producer. Even if you did not create the show, you can still get executive producer status. And that's when it gets sold and it's into reruns, and when it gets sold into box sets or the format is sold into, you know, Thailand or Jamaica. And they make a show out of it. They make the Jamaican version of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to make a ton of money if you're the executive producer. You're going to make a little bit more if you're a producer, but not much. Basically, the EPs are the only ones to make money. So that's where you want to get. It's just more power and it's more money.
Jamaica Mad Men is just called Mad Mon. See, it's almost the same show.
We will. I'm sure at some point when we're low on a subject, we will do a whole thing about the Jamaican Mad Men and what it would be like.
All right, stay. That'll be episode like 48.
48. We'll cast it and everything.
Jamaican Mad Men. Yeah. And then the last question I have is from Bob Mack, longtime listener again. They're coming back to us, Tim. They're coming back to
the TV Talk Machine. Bob Mack's loyalty is pretty amazing. Bob Mack, on one of our iterations of TV Talk Machine, we had a thing called the Flat Bastard, which was the logo of our, which is still kind of our same logo.
Yeah.
And we'd have people put that in a, you know, print it out And if you could, you might put wax it over a little bit to make it stiff and carry that to wherever you traveled and take a picture of yourself in foreign countries, in foreign cities, in famous locations holding that flat bastard. I think Flat Manny is the original incarnation of that. And we called it the Flat Bastard. Mm-hmm. One of our listeners did. But Bob Mack takes the cake for shooting a flat bastard, picture of him and his wife holding a flat bastard while they were in the hospital delivering their baby.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame first ballot.
Yeah. Although not my favorite flat bastard picture.
Oh.
Because my favorite is the guy at Nicolae Ceaușescu's grave with the flat bastard, the former dictator of Romania who was executed after they revolted against him. And at Ceaușescu's grave, there's the TV Talk Machine logo.
There's been some very odd placements.
Don't look for it. Don't just. It's all actually a lot of those pictures are on the Facebook page. Anyway, Bob Mack had a simple question, which is, what did you watch before you did it as a profession?
Ooh, mostly sports, and you know, honestly, when I got this job, I was actually this current job, but I was a music critic.
Yeah, so you came in from the critic side.
I did, and I was not watching much television. I actually did not grow up on television very much. I wasn't like banned from watching it, but I watched them as a kid. But I missed great swaths of influential programming that people today were like, oh, you know, Golden Spoons or whatever it is, you know.
Silver Spoons. Come on, Tim. Golden Spoons.
Golden Spoons.
This explains the top five spy shows thing.
Yeah, there's a big gap in all of that. I had to become aware of it later in life as I became a critic. But yeah, no, when I started, I was notoriously unaware of anything that had come before I got the job because I was, you know, my love was music and I was a music critic. But now, of course, I love, and I'm a longtime critic and I love it. But, and I have passed up many of those holes in my, many of those holes in my past. Well, I will say, as an aside, and I'm not trying to name drop, but I do know Jason Bateman pretty well. And Jason thinks it's actually funny that I don't know any of the shows that he grew up on.
Yeah, and he's
television.
He's my age. He like me, a fellow Jason of the 70s. And, and yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah, you just missed all those terrible sitcoms that we watched when we were 10.
People will talk to him about that, like Little House on the Prairie and Silver Spoons and whatever else he was on. He was on tons of that stuff, and I'm like, nah, never seen it. And he just thinks it's hilarious. Like, because at the beginning, he thought I was joking. I'm like, no, I've not seen one episode of that.
Have you never seen It's Your Move?
Never.
Oh, man. That was the Jason Bateman sitcom.
Oh.
And it was actually kind of great.
It's Your Move,
it,
man.
It only lasted half a season, I think. But it was actually kind of great in its 80s sitcom way. But
yeah,
I
have a gap.
You were listening to rock and roll, the rock and roll music, some punk, the Clash.
Very, very rock and roll.
That's all the feedback we got. We blew through it there.
That was a good one. And we came late on we had a rally on this Friday. But you rallied on this Friday. I had chaos upon chaos.
Well, you had to rally from your chaos to get here. But you know, I'm going to say it. This was a grade eight. Look at that.
That's
I've
great.
Declared it grade
nice.
Eight.
Good. I'm so happy that you voted that because I was earlier on, you were probably thinking, eh?
A little shaky.
Maybe a meh eight.
We pulled it out.
Eight. We did, though, because we told stories.
Mm-hmm.
There were some pretty interesting in-depth stories about backstory. And that's what people, you know what? People really want backstory.
Sure. Sure.
You know,
they want to know why Sleepy Hollow isn't getting with the program, too. But
they want to know why Sleepy Hollow's calling us after.
Yeah. John Cho and Karen Gillan are going to call us and be like, why did you get our show canceled?
Yeah, they're going to say, hey, can you have any advice for online?
Yeah.
Actually, don't go on
some
a show
feedback.
Called Selfie again.
Yeah.
Ever again.
Ever again. Never, never, ever again. Well, here is how you get in touch. If you would like to get us some questions or comments for next time, you can tweet at us at TVTM on Twitter. You can go to the Facebook page and join it and talk to a lot of fun people who are on the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can always email us at podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. All one word. It's actually lots of words, but they're smashed together on the internet into one word. And Tim is a Bastard Machine on Twitter. I am Jay Snell on Twitter. And so if you're a showrunner who would like to follow us, go ahead. It doesn't hurt.
And if you would like to talk to us about why, what went wrong, every week we got something.
Tim's accepting your calls. He will accept your phone calls to discuss in person what the problems are with your show. So you can take that back to the writer's room. Yeah.
Yeah, the doctor is in.
It's nice.
Maybe that'll be our next one where we line up people whose shows are ailing.
That actually is kind of a great idea. Although I worry now that it's just going to be like, who do we want to talk to us?
Yes.
like I really like this producer. What if we say bad things about their show? Then they might call. But no, actually diagnosing shows with problems, that would be a great topic for a future show, but not for the Great Eight, because that episode is done. Tim,
in the book.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk next week.
Great.
Bye, everybody.